Good Saturday afternoon to y'all. Thank y'all for tuning in. This is Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm Taylor Metz, and I'm here with my dad.
Hello.
And we've been kind of having an ICAST theme show, so keeping going with that, here's my interview with Matt Florentino at AFTCO. Hey, I'm here at ICAST 2021. We're sitting here at the AFTCO booth. I'm here with Matt Florentino, and we have a new women's line coming out, don't we?
We do.
I'm so excited. I've gotten to see a couple new pieces, and they are so comfortable and so practical and kind of cute. Not going to lie about that. So, Matt, take a couple minutes and talk about the new pieces y'all have coming out.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I guess just to reel things back, our women's line was something we launched a few seasons ago. Once we did launch our women's line, we just wanted to get it right and do it right. And, you know, stuff, you guys are on the water, you guys are charging it, just I see you all the time out there. And we want stuff that looks good, keep you comfortable, keep you dry, and all the things you know AFTCO for. So at this show, we're really pumped and really proud. We won for the Women's Lifestyle Award in the New Product Showcase category for apparel.
Yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. That was a unique piece. That was our women's field overall.
Yeah.
I pretty much want to say it's the only women's overall for fishing that is out there. And that's a fun one. But, you know, I would say with our shorts, with our sun protection gear, with our women's Hydronaut, with our women's Reaper, and a multitude of other things, we literally have everything you could possibly need for staying comfortable and dry on the water. And, you know, ultimately, we just want to make stuff that works. One other interesting thing, and I think I was chatting with you and a few of the other gals, is that our product development team is largely female. I want to say, I think we're about 99% female in our product and development team. They're very passionate about getting that stuff right, because it's stuff that they wear, it's stuff that, you know, they work with our pro team on. It's important to get that stuff right. It's not easy on the women's side, and we've put a lot of time and effort with our development, with fit testing, with R&D, with folks like Mo Newman or Christine Fisher or Taylor as well. You wear all of our gear. And it's so valuable to just produce good, functional product for the girls charging on the water.
Right. And I feel like something that's so unique about this is that y'all take into account everything that we need. I mean, fit, the way, I mean, with the Hydronaut suit, I got to try that on. And the fit is absolutely perfect. And it's movable. It's not restricting and everything. And y'all have some cool technology that goes into the hood and everything. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah. And the Hydronaut suit, we just saw the need, ultimately. There's not many options for female anglers in outerwear. Hydronaut was a really good piece for us on the men's side. We won Best in Show for cold weather in 2018. We got many requests from gals and having good rain gear. And with that suit, we have it. Match that with our women's Reaper, and you could pretty much fish anytime throughout fall and winter, nice, dry, and comfortable. Keyword dry.
Right.
You know, with that suit, it's proven itself season over season that it just works.
Right. I'm so excited about some of the new shorts coming out too. I have a bad obsession with wearing shorts. And I will order every single... Talk about the field shorts.
Yes.
Those are ones that I'm really excited about.
Yes, I'm glad you brought those up. The field utility short, it's a derivative of the field utility overall. It's the same ripstop fabric, really lightweight, has good stretch to it, DWR finish, utility pocket, you name it, it's going to be a good one. That layers into the rest of the line, like our original fishing short, our micro bite, our ladyfish shorts. I can't even think of all of them because we have so many now. But that one is going to be a really popular one come spring 2022.
That's so great. Are there any other pieces you're really excited about?
I would say for me, personally, it was a project we worked on. We launched here at ICAST. It's our women's rescue quarter zip.
Right.
The rescue line, it's I kind of say it's like where sustainability meets functionality.
Right.
So the rescue women's quarter zip, it's all made from Econil fabric. What that is Econil is regenerated nylon. So we've taken things like fishing nets, carpet scraps, fabric scraps. They take those, so keep them out of places they shouldn't be, whether it's in the ocean or in a landfill or what have you. They take that, break that down into fibers, and from there we could take that, the fibers, and spin them really into anything that we want to make. So with that quarter zip, it's really sharp, really comfortable, has breathability throughout the whole shirt, UPF sun protection, really lightweight, and at the same time, you're kind of doing your part, you know, as stewards for what we do.
So. Right. How did y'all get into the whole rescue program?
Honestly, we looked in the mirror. We've done a lot for conservation since 1973. You know, a lot of folks know us for what we do and giving back, 10% pledge. We give 10% of profits every year. But we kind of, not to say we didn't check the box with sustainability, but ultimately, we really didn't, you know. We had a couple recycled pieces in the line, but come ICAST 2021 with this launch, and also with our Fisheries First initiative that we launched as well, we're taking all that seriously. So, you know, from internally within our offices and our processes, we've totally retooled what we're doing. We've, all of our hang tags now are recycled. We have new processes within the warehouse for making sure recycling things need to be recycled. And with our products, you know, so like with Rescue, we have that line there. With our Adapt shirt and a few other styles, we're integrating recycled and at a larger capacity. So I'm very proud to say come spring 22, 30% of our entire line will be made from different recycled materials. And that's going from, you know, not say we're at zero, but we're maybe at like, you know, a fraction of a percent of our line was recycled. So in a short period of time, we'll be very aggressive with that sustainability push. And we're taking styles like, say, our Samurai shirt that all, you know, most folks, that may be a first piece they pick up from us, still one of our number one selling performance shirts. That'll all be made now from recycled material. And honestly, it still performs at the same level. If you know us, we make sure we get things right. These are all lab tested, has the same UPF sun protection factors, all the other things you know from us with moisture wicking, what have you. So that'll be something you guys will see from us. Going forward, we're scaling further. We just did our first in-house beach cleanup locally. We're trying to scale cleanups in different regions that we sell in or inactive in, and still continuing to do what we have done with conservation. So all that tied together, really just trying to do the best what we can for, you know, ensure there's a fishery for tomorrow.
And that's something I love about y'all's company. You know, y'all aren't an everyday company. You are much more than clothing. Your heart and soul, listening to Bill Shedd, who's the owner, talk about how y'all went from fishing tackle and everything to clothing. Now that's the main part of y'all's business. Listening to them talk about that story, you hear so much heart and soul about this business and how family-oriented it is and the atmosphere around this company.
I mean, for me personally, I'm very blessed to work for the Shedd family, work at AFCO. I'm going on close to 9 years now.
Oh, wow.
I feel part of the family myself. And that's really, you said family-oriented. We're a mom-and-pop operation at the end of the day.
Right,
most folks don't know that or realize that just because of how recognized our name is. You can see our products on any boat in the world. If you see a Goldie Gap, it's an AFCO.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we're a family-owned and operated company. I'm very, very fortunate to go into the office, you know, every day, work with the folks I do. We all share the same common goal. We all just want to make really good products that work and give back where we can. So whether that's through, you know, like I mentioned, 10% pledge, new Fisheries First initiative, working with different conservation groups throughout, you know, both saltwater and freshwater now. We have our live release boat, our bank bat program. I mean, the list goes on. And I kind of sometimes good to stop and think, exactly what we're doing. And, you know, just really trying to make a positive impact, no matter what we're doing, whether it's our gear, with its, you know, with its with our customers, or with its with our initiatives, just try to really get to be good people at the end of the day.
And y'all are doing a great job at that. So yeah, if you haven't ever heard of AFCO, look them up, buy some of their clothes. You are helping the environment by buying their clothes. Check them out. Thank you so much, Matt, for taking some time to talk to me.
Thank you, Taylor.
I'm so excited to see where this women's line goes. I know this is gonna grow and grow, and I can't wait to see where it goes.
100%.
Thank you so much.
Alrighty, Taylor.
Your interview. And I forgot to bring the thought. We turned our mics off while we're it's a little bit of a engineering issue here.
Operator error.
Anyway, good interview. And in fact, I've got Bill Shedd from AFCO coming up next segment. So y'all hang them out. We'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. And listening to your interview with Matt Florentino, it touches on a lot of things that my interview with Bill Shedd, the chairman of the board with AFCO, we didn't listen to these 2 seconds before this. We just knew we had interviews at ICAST.
Oh,
so,
well.
So here's my interview with Bill Shedd, the chairman of the board at AFCO, and AFCO being one of the companies that we deal with and work with and really enjoy that relationship. So welcome back. It's another little edition of ICAST Live. I'm live. You'll hear this later on. But you know, right now you can hear the noise in the background and everything. And this has been so much fun this year, being here after a year off. You're going to get a special treat for the next few minutes. I'm sitting with Mr. Bill Shedd, who is the son of the founder. He is currently the chairman of the board. His son Casey's president. They have been so good to Taylor and I over the past few years. We love their products, and we wear them every chance we get. You can't get enough of them, and y'all need to buy some of them. But, Mr. Shedd, you know, I can remember back as far as like 2017, I believe, was the first year I really, really noticed, because you had a display, and then you wrote like 7 checks. And you had those big award checks, and they were written to 7 different conservation organizations. On all of your catalogs and all, it's a 10% back for conservation, which is something y'all always done. I've read the story of your dad. You gave me the book, and I know the complete history of it all. But take, I don't know, 8-10 minutes and talk about how AFCO, as a retail company selling clothes, has always been conservation-based and minded.
Well, it's pretty basic, pretty easy. It comes from my father. We're a family business, and our history as a family, you know, goes long ways back into the ocean. My father was the co-founder of SeaWorld, the Oceanarium, and built the first park in San Diego, and then one in Aurora, Ohio, and then one that a lot of people know about is in Orlando, Florida. But he told me even as a kid, he says, you know, Billy, your mom and I took creatures from the ocean that belonged to everybody, but they really belonged to nobody, and we built a business around that, and we made money at it. So what that means is, your mom and I have a responsibility to look for ways, to find ways, to do good things for the ocean. And he said, you know, you're going to benefit from that in your lifetime as well, so you have that same responsibility. So be thinking about what you can do in your lifetime to help conserve and protect the marine environment around you. And then when we got involved with AFCO in 1973, when mom and dad bought AFCO, AFCO was actually started in 1958, it was the same sort of thing. Now our family's going to be making its living, or part of its living, in the fishing tackle industry. So you've got a role to figure out. How can you give back to that industry? So it's just part of the DNA of our family.
Okay.
It comes from being anglers and just having a passion for the ocean and for fishing, and now for freshwater fishing with our bass involvement. And so it's nothing that gets forced. It's who we are. We just have always taken, it's been more than 10% of our profits, and put that back into conservation issues. That was easy in saltwater to be, and we're known as a leader in the saltwater
sure.
world in marine conservation, because there's lots of national organizations to support. You mentioned me earlier, and it's easy to write checks to organizations because there's a lot of good ones out there.
Sure.
There's activities like involved with banning gill nets, which we ultimately use some of that material for making clothing down the road here. So that's kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
But and banning gear types that are destructive, or the other side of it, increasing habitat, supporting reef development, artificial reef development, supporting fish hatcheries, both saltwater and freshwater. But saltwater, it's been easier to find activities to be involved with. Now, just been 3.5 years ago, we got involved in the bass world, and our model is we're a brand, we're a manufacturer, but how do we tie, you know, giving back to the community in a conservation way? Much more difficult in freshwater, because the freshwater world is so scattered out.
Right.
Unlike saltwater, where you can have something that's important to the whole country, you know, a focus for the whole country, a single issue, or at least a whole state. In freshwater, it isn't even focused to the state level or even the city level. It's focused down to the lake level.
That's right. And yes, sir.
So it's tougher to find, but you can find them, and we found, you know, lots of things that we could do to support conservation in freshwater fishing.
The
garbage bags that y'all will pass out at bass tournaments, stuff like that, for people to pick up trash along the edge of the lake. Perfect example.
That's it. That's simple. Now you can have anglers on a lake, and you want to pick up trash, but you also want to educate them on a real conservation issue with freshwater fishermen.
Sure.
We lose our soft plastics, and back in the day, people don't do it anymore, but at least responsible people don't do it. They take a soft plastic and throw it into the lake when they're, you know, when they've chewed it up. And that, what happens there, that sits there forever. The guy that owns the property on the lake sees that, and it's trash in his front yard.
Sure.
He doesn't like that, and he gets excited about it. I don't want you fishing on my lake. So it's not good for us as a community. It's not good for us as a for the resource. So we got to stop that. How do you and that's kind of the key to all this conservation stuff. How do you stop it? You stop it by educating people.
Right.
So you mentioned the bank bags. So we go to tournaments. A lot of other guys will write checks to sponsor that tournament. We'll provide them a big bag. It's called a bank bag. And the folks fishing the tournament, they take the soft plastics, they throw it in that bag. If they find any other trash, not just the trash in their boat, if they see something floating on the lake, they pick it up, they go around the lake, and if they fill up those bags, they get a discount card to purchase clothing at AFCO. So they've got an incentive to do it. But really what we're after there is just to educate people on why you shouldn't throw your soft plastics back into the in the lake. Or you can, you know, we're going to sponsor a tournament. Sometimes we write checks as part of our 10% pledge. But another thing we can do is we built, in partnership with Yamaha, we built the Bass Bus. So we take that that boat that's built just to carry fish, rather than at the end of the tournament, rather than let them go at the marina, where now they're concentrated and the kids can go back down there and catch them, and we get them out into open water and release them, and release them healthy back into... now, you know, the major tournaments and the Elite Series and those guys, I mean, they've been doing this for years. They've got that all figured out, but there's many hundreds of smaller tournaments around the country that don't have the ability to have their a bass bus, so have a barge, in essence, a pontoon boat that's built just for that
release
purpose.
Boat.
It's a release boat. Mm-hmm. So we then provide that to the tournament. Now the tournament loves it because that's a conservation effort for them to be involved with, and we can just plug them right into it. And for them, in that instance, that's more valuable than money. And so there's lots of ways to skin a cat. Sometimes it's with dollar bills, and sometimes it's with just being a little creative.
That's exactly right. You know, you mentioned fish hatcheries, and I know your dad started one in California, which was probably the first thing he really did in this give back. Talk a minute, just for a minute, about the fish hatchery.
Well, it's he did a lot of things. This was certainly one of them that was important. But he fished all his life in Southern California. I know lots of guys that love to fish, and I never knew anybody that loved to fish like my dad. And he used to catch a lot of white sea bass as a younger angler, which in Southern California, that's our main prized biggest inshore fish that we could catch.
Okay.
And the gillnets really knocked them down to, didn't make them extinct, but made them very hard to catch and very few knocked the resource way down. So to help bring that fishery back, Dad had started the Hub SeaWorld Research Institute, the research arm and marine conservation arm of SeaWorld, back even a year before he and his partner founded SeaWorld. So one of the things that he asked Hubs to do early on, the institute to do early on, was to let's figure out how to raise white sea bass in captivity. He provided the money to get that started, and started raising white sea bass in a program that now has anglers are greatly involved in it. So what we do is we take little white sea bass about 4 inches long, give them to fishing clubs in Southern California, saltwater fishing clubs. They build a receiver and raise them up until they're about 8 or 10 inches long, so that there's not many fish in our bays that can eat them. Release them back into the wild to help Mother Nature bring back an inshore species that is real important to anglers in Southern California.
And those guys in those clubs can go back and catch those sea bass.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, they're raising another generation back at the little holding facility.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're feeling like, and all those guys, they, I mean, everybody that fishes, they want to do something for the resource.
Sure.
It's all pretty obvious to the angler that mankind, people are impacting the resource around us. It took until 1850 to get the first billion people on this earth. Now we're approaching 8 billion. And that's not very many years from all the history of mankind.
Right.
And so that has an impact on nature. Well, the people that are out in nature, anglers, people using it, you know, we see that impact. So we want to do something for the resource. We want to help. But, you know, what does a guy do? What's a saltwater fisherman going to do to help the resource? Well, this hatchery has been a great avenue for anglers to take their volunteer time. You know, it's more than 5,000 hours a year at these various stations of anglers volunteering to help feed, take care of, raise these white sea bass and get them turned out into the wild. And they're doing it because they care about the resource, and they're doing it selfishly because they'd like the opportunity to catch fish.
Sure.
But the real reason they're doing it is they want their kids and grandkids to have a shot at it.
I got about a minute left in a segment here. You as a son, a dad, and all, it's so much easier, and I'm a dad, I have first grandson.
I met your daughter.
Oh, no.
what a sweetheart. Loves to fish.
Yes, she does. And, she is all in it now.
Yeah,
and thank you for that. I appreciate it. As a parent, that's very humbling. Very humbling to have someone say that about your kid. But quickly, it's so much easier to teach by example than by dictate. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And so parents, when you're listening to this stuff and we're talking about the bank bags and giving back and all, if your kids see you doing it and your involvement and your excitement of it, it is so much easier to get them to follow along in your footsteps than if you don't do that but try to just teach them that's what they should be doing.
No, absolutely. That's, I had a dad that had a real bent for looking after the nature around him, and he just did it. He lived it out, and makes it easy and natural for me to want to do the same.
Ingrained in your person,
it's just part of who we are.
Absolutely. Well, great company, great story, folks. If you want some good stuff, and I can vouch for it, they don't pay me to say this at all. It's good stuff, AFCO, and Mr. Shedd, we appreciate what you're doing in the industry and for giving back and being the example for other companies to follow.
Thank you. Appreciate the chance to talk here.
Absolutely.
This one. Well, this is
I thought I've heard all of your songs.
You haven't. This is a good one. You gotta listen to the whole song. You'd like it.
Sure.
You would.
Sure.
You know, as busy as we were at ICAST, we still couldn't get everything done, which is, you never get everything done.
No,
ICAST.
You don't.
And I wonder, part of that maybe is the reason we keep going back. This faint hope.
That's
one
true.
Day I'm gonna go in. I know what. Next year we just plan to do one thing. And we get that thing done, we can say we did ICAST, we got all our stuff done.
Okay, but like every year we go in with a daggum schedule and we never...
In the first 3 minutes this year, it was shot. But anyway, one of the guys that we didn't catch up to that I had on my list of things to do was Andy Montgomery. And, you know, actually, Andy, you were just kind of in one place this year, and I knew where you were, and I kept going back, and you were busy, and then you were gone, and then you were home. And we didn't get it, so we decided to do it on the phone. But I appreciate you taking a few minutes and being on the show today.
Yeah, it was good to join you. I guess for some reason, it seemed like it flew by this year, for me anyway. I know in the past, sometimes them days get long, but this year came and gone quick.
You know, and I wonder if it was kind of laid back, being that you couldn't have any of the internationals here from Europe or Japan and all. It was less crowded. I think most of the same people were there that would have been there ordinarily. But you guys, I mean, y'all didn't have to every 30 or 45 minutes be somewhere different. And that must've been pretty fun.
Yeah. And I'm a little bit different because, you know, I'm so heavily invested in losing Strike King. And I don't have to run to a whole lot of different booths. So, I mean, with losing Strike King, they make pretty much everything. And you know, I pretty much represent them in every category possible. So makes it a little easier when I don't have to run around that show booth to booth.
One of the first, speaking of getting our schedules off, Randy Howell was it was somewhere, maybe Livingston Booth or something, and he waved us over.
Oh, yeah.
And Robin, he said, this is the first year Robin hasn't been here to kind of.
Like 25 years or something.
Yeah,
like
or something like that to do my schedule and stuff like that. And he said, but she's calling me and texting me all the time, telling me where I should go next.
All I know is
Randy's been traveling this year on the road by himself, and we've been giving him a hard time. He's ate with me and Otto several times. He actually stayed with us one time because he got in a pretty bad situation where he was actually sharing a house with people he didn't know on VRBO.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was one mutual bathroom, and it was crazy. So, anyway, he came and stayed with me and Odd at Harris Chain in Florida, and we gave him a hard time about Robin not being there.
Yeah.
I think one of his boys is really good in basketball, playing a lot of AAU basketball.
Oakley. Yep, and she's got to stay home and hang out with Oakley.
It's funny, though, every time I would see him, I would basically just see him running down each aisle. Like, I was like, oh, there's
– that's Randy.
Oh, bye, Randy. Hi, Randy.
Randy found out real fast that them kids are more important than him.
Yes. Yes. Of course.
Oakley's duties call before Randy's duties call.
Yep.
But Laker is there doing his own thing in ICAST now.
He was. I got to talk to him. Real, just a super kid.
Yep.
Even from a long time ago. And he's got a bright future in this sport. There's no doubt about that. Him, there's several of them, but he's got a bright future.
Absolutely. Well, Strike King Lou's got some stuff coming out. The Andy Montgomery, I guess you call, either you got your signature on it or you got your fingerprints on it, one of the two. and it's been fun kind of being on the inside watching you. I mean, I remember seeing you, and you had, I don't know, 15 or 20 different rubber frogs. They were all cut apart and glued together with different legs and all. And that's the engineer in you. A lot of people don't know that you got an engineering degree from Clemson. But so when you do the signature stuff, it's not you just putting your name on it. You are doing the work to get it to where it needs to be before it goes to production.
Yeah, that was a long process. And we're talking about the Strike King Skipping Buzz Bait.
There you go.
It got released. It's they're producing as fast as they can right now. Hadn't hit the stores yet. But you're right. You're right. I put a lot of frogs together. And the crazy thing is when you're doing that process, you kind of get surprised yourself. Like the frog that actually comes in the package with the skipping buzz bait skips better than the other frogs we traditionally had thrown, which is, the horny toad. It's no secret.
Sure.
We threw a horny toad a lot. And I don't know if it's because of the bigger legs on it or what it was, but it just, when I put that frog on there and was at the lake playing around, I was pretty impressed with how well it skipped. And then, these baits evolve over time. We've really been trying this for a long time, and we never could get past the traditional buzz bait and how to make this thing hold together. When skipping, because I can skip a buzz bait, with my biggest pet peeve, my biggest problem was how much time I had to spend keeping it together, keeping it, the wire like it should be, especially after you catch a fish or you hit something under a dock or whatever. And I was actually practicing at Athens in Texas on our off day.
Yeah.
Is it the Lake Fork event? And I looked down and I was playing with the buzz bait. We tried a different twist on the R bend.
Okay.
We tried so much stuff. But anyway, I looked down, seen a piece of wire, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is going to work. And so I rigged one up in the boat, went to fishing, and that's when I called Charles at Strike King and said I got it. And and then it was a process even after that. There's so much goes into that at these bigger companies that mass produce baits.
Right.
It's just a whole different level of challenges. I'll just say that, challenges.
Well, you have nipped around the corners of this skipping buzz bait, and a lot of people are going, you can skip a buzz bait. Folks, let me tell you, Andy Montgomery can skip a brick. That's just fact. But you tell us, what is the skipping buzz bait?
Yeah, so the skipping buzz bait is, for lack of better terms, a buzz bait that skips. And the way we got this thing put together with a wire connecting the two wires together where it normally would split. Just kind of holds everything together. There's a couple more little things. You need a compact buzz bait where you kind of hide the blade underneath the soft plastic. You have to use soft plastic. You right. can't skip just a regular skirt.
Okay.
And it's something about the way this wire holds this frame together just really, really makes it work. I mean, it just does. You know, the angle that the main wire comes out of the head's important.
Okay.
This is a lot of stuff that I've learned over the years. And like I said, when I was in the process of making this buzz bait, you know, some of my theories proved to be incorrect. And, but anyway, we came up with this, and I really, be honest with you, I hadn't pushed it out on social media and stuff like that real hard yet, just because we don't have them in stock sure. ready to sell yet.
Sure.
We just got at ICAST. There was, I think, 50,000 wires showed up at the manufacturing plant to start putting them together. So I'm excited about it. I just know how well it works. I mean, it just flat works. It flat catches them. It's all about putting a lure places that maybe the fish hadn't seen that type of lure.
Yeah, and a buzzbait 10 feet back up under a dock. Yeah, a buzzbait 10 feet under a dock is just something they had never seen before.
Well, yeah, you might even consider this one 20 foot under a dock.
I'm going to start out conservative, Andy, 10 feet for me, if I can get it that far. Other things you got out, coming out. Got about, I don't know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes?
Oh, wow. We always, never have enough time.
No, we don't.
But anyway, so we released the Skipping Rod, which I've worked on that for a while, too. The Lou Signature Series.
Right.
You know, it's me, Kevin, Greg Hackney, Mark Rose. I'm missing somebody, Zona. Yeah, so we all did our specialty. Of course, mine's skipping.
Right.
And also another deal, because I've had skipping rods out in the past. These are really, really similar action-wise.
Okay.
Just bad dudes. And if you pair them with the Lou skipping reel, which good luck getting one, but there are more coming. The Lou skipping reel is something I'm very proud of, too. And got a lot of comments at ICAST on how that's really helped people get better at skipping or even learn to skip. So the feedback on that was tremendous. What did I mean? Oh, the Thunder Cricket Rod.
Okay.
Is also in the Signature Series. Mine's a little bit different than a lot of the rods out on the market. Mine's got a little more backbone to it.
Okay.
Still got a lot of tip to it.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm a target-oriented fisherman most of the time, so I built this for that application, even though you can still get off the bank with grass. A Thunder Cricket or bladed jig has a bigger hook in it.
Right.
But similar to a jig hook. So
right.
I want that backbone to be able to get that, you know, get that hook through that fish. So, pretty excited about the Thunder Cricket Rod. I've had skipping rods in the past. I knew how to build them.
Right.
And you know, they're perfect, but the Thunder Cricket Rod was the one that was kind of, you know, I played with a little bit. So, pretty excited about it. And, man, just good times. I got so much skipping-oriented stuff out there that it's hard for me to keep it all straight.
I know it. And folks, I have one of those aforementioned skipping reels, and I can promise you, the 2 years it took me to learn how to skip, I could have probably done it in 15 or 20 minutes if I had your stuff before, Andy.
Yeah, it's really good. That skipping reel is simple, but it's so impressive. Yeah.
Well, thanks for a few minutes of your time, Andy. Next time we're going to make it longer because we didn't even get to talk about the up north stuff, but thanks. I appreciate it, man.
Awesome. Thank y'all.
All right. Well, good show.
Very good show.
Had a great time at ICAST. Mm-hmm. So good to see everybody again.
I miss being around.
Yes, you did.
So
you were a different person after Wednesday at ICAST than you were Wednesday morning before we got before we got there. Of course, Clifford started working in Tuesday night with sushi.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
I did. I branched out. See, there's been this ongoing problem.
Oh my goodness gracious, Taylor!
What I call sushi is not what a lot of people in the industry call sushi. It's a tradition.
Industry.
Yes, like
in life,
Clifford, and well, no,
general
you can't
life.
Say that.
Yes, I
no,
can.
Y'all
too.
Are sushi snobs.
We're not.
Anyway, so it's a tradition that when we go to like bass tournaments, stuff like that, we always try to get a group together to go to sushi. Not always works, but you know sometimes it does. And so this time we went with Clifford Weedman.
Group was short this week because a lot of people didn't get in Tuesday night. A lot of the normal thugs and all that we hang out with.
I'll make sure to tell them you said
tell
that.
Everybody I said that.
But my big thing is I am a scaredy cat when it comes to raw stuff. Not so much because it's raw, just because I'm scared of the taste. But so I always get like a shrimp tempura roll, which if you don't know what tempura means, it means it's fried. And that's what I always get. That's what I call sushi. I also don't like soy sauce, so I dip it in white sauce or shrimp sauce, whatever you want to call it. But this time, I branched out, and I got an Alaskan roll, which is salmon and avocado and cucumber. And I didn't have white sauce, so I had spicy mayonnaise.
That was a little spicy.
It was spicy. But speaking
their
of spicy
mayonnaise down there was a lot spicier than some of the others I've had.
But I don't think it was as spicy as the 6 straight shots of
holy smoke
wasabi that Clifford took.
Right in front, just like one
I
little
thought,
ball
I
at a time.
I thought I was going to be sick.
For him. Of course, Clifford's from Texas.
But
they handle heat a lot different down there than we do.
It hit him on the way home, and he was like, I need milk. And we went into the gas station, and he went and bought himself a big thing of chocolate milk.
Uh-huh. Little case of buyer's remorse there.
Yep. But, yeah, so it was definitely a great week. I was happy to see some people from Shimano and AFTCO, and I kind of went off on my own there for a little bit, didn't I?
For a little bit.
Well, the rest of the week.
Here's how it went, folks. We had a Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. If you're not a member of that or donate, I don't know if they actually give memberships. It's you donate, and then you sign up for an email list, and they keep you posted on things that are going on. But TRCP, every year at ICAST, since I've been going, since 2015, has done luncheons on Wednesday and Thursday. And it's always... there's always something I can get into. This year was 30 by 30 on Wednesday, and then something about Gulf Menhaden stocks on Thursday. So I wasn't too interested in the Gulf Menhaden stocks, but the 30 by 30 was
interesting.
It was a very good discussion.
Yeah.
You had a representative from NOAA that was in the Biden administration was there. If you've got that stuff in your you've got that stuff in your backpack. I haven't gotten back from you yet.
Yeah, sorry. It's in my backpack still.
Anyway, it just kind of synopsis. We had a NOAA representative from Biden administration, assistant director or something. So that it's not just their local people. It's national people. We had the national attorney for ASA. Mm-hmm. We had one of the TRCP guys was there. And there was a fourth one, and I can't remember where he was from. I wish I had that thing in front of me, but a really good discussion from all angles.
It cleared up a lot of confusion between 30 by 30 and stuff like that because, you know, some people are like, oh, conservation of the 30% they're talking about, but what you really don't see is how it's completely closed off.
In California.
Yeah.
Yes, what they're trying to do in California is not conservation. It's
like preservation, but not the right way.
Preservation without use. I mean, it's off limits. And that's a lot of it is done with oceans too. Mm-hmm. You know, you get MMAs where you can't fish bottom fish and you can't troll for pelagics over top of that. Even though the protection is for the bottom structure, you can't go troll, rig ballyhoo at 5 feet under the surface over those areas. Because it's the whole water column's protected, not just what needs to be protected on the bottom,
right, which
is spawning grounds or whatever like that. So there's a very lively discussion in there on the definition of conservation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What is conservation? When is something conserved? And when is something moved beyond being need to conserve? In other words, it's, you know, when do you have a light red snapper? You know, mm-hmm. they've been in a conservation because 3-day seasons. Well, at some point... they either are gone and you don't need to conserve them anymore, or they've rebounded and you can, you know, open those up again for normal fishing or whatever So it's that's the big definition. The second sticking point with 30 by 30, and if you haven't read about it or heard about it, it'd probably do you some good just to be up on what the issue is, it should be a state-level initiative. Right. The Biden administration's got this federal-level initiative, 30 by 30 by 30. But each state knows what needs to be conserved, and a lot of states have the funding mechanisms for this conservation. We have the Conservation Bank here in South Carolina with all its problems. It is a mechanism to fund conservation in South Carolina. So, and we know what needs to be done in South Carolina. The federal government doesn't know what needs to be done, but we do. In South Carolina, Department of Natural Resources, in conjunction with whoever, can come up with those issues. And a lot of states, I'm trying to think if it was South Carolina they used for an example, or if this is something I read somewhere else, but like 23% of the land in South Carolina is already, quote-unquote, conserved. So, does that count towards the 30, or is the 30 on the federal side, and now we're going to wind up with 53% of the land in South Carolina conserved with 30% of it off limits? That's the big sticking point. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, I am all for conservation. My whole life has been, since I was a little kid, you know, conservation. You take care of the resource, you take care of the environment, you don't do dumb things to pollute it, you don't do... you know, I was never allowed to shoot a covey of quail down below by 15 birds. And if you shot a covey and it had 20-something birds and you were having a good day, you never went and shot singles. You did the covey rise, moved on. Fishing was a little bit different because of a pond situation with brim. You know, a lot of pond managers tell you never throw a brim back. You know, if you have a mixed, you know, brim, bass, whatever, never throw a brim back. I have a hard time throwing a brim up on the bank, letting them flop. So I return a lot of brim to the water, but I keep a lot because you got to keep them in balance. That's what hunting and fishing regulations and season are meant to do, is to give access, let you go and take of the natural resources at the same time, conserving them for tomorrow, next week, next year, and in the next generation. So it was a very good one. Very, very good one. A lot of, and with SCBFA here in South Carolina, when it was introduced, we looked at the bill. It was the version from California. We decided that it wasn't a good thing for South Carolina. We worked in the state house, and now we're constructing our own bill. We're going to introduce our own 30 by 30 in South Carolina with what we've already conserved in mind, with a good definition of conservation and what it means. And it will be in the limelight of hunting and fishing for the public is good and a necessary tenet of 30 by 30 and conservation. The role of hunters and fishermen has to be taken into account. The public access has to be there, even in a conservation situation. So interesting stuff. But yeah, good week. But anyway, so we had that luncheon Wednesday, and shortly thereafter, I got a phone call that Taylor was needed at the AFCO booth. So off she went. About 2 hours later, I was walking down an aisle, and Casey Ashley and Kenzie were standing up along the side doing something. And he grabbed me. I didn't see him. He kind of grabbed me by the arm, and he's like, "Hey, man." I said, "Hey, Casey, how you doing?" He goes, "Hey, I saw Taylor earlier." I said, "Wow." I said, "I hadn't seen her in a couple hours." And in his best Donald's South Carolina English said, "She don't need you no more." And that was the thing that got repeated during the week. She don't need you no more. So I guess now I'm a taxi service to get Taylor around. Well, actually, I'm not even service because she's got her dry summer. So, you know.
So when the classic comes to Hartwell next year, I will just drive there whenever I want to.
Oh, my goodness.
You'll see me pulling up my GMC, and I've got my Shimano and AFCO stickers. You'll know it's me.
It. So, anyway, but a great week. Good to see everybody. They're you know, it's the outdoors is never closed, folks.
No, it's not.
No matter what happens, the outdoors is never closed. Mm-hmm. Okay,
we
have run out of time. We got some stuff to get to quickly, Taylor.
Okay, so the weekend on the water is August 20th through the 22nd. Join the women of Artemis, South Carolina for 3 days of fishing, kayaking, and enjoying Lake Murray. All experience levels welcome. Space is limited. So if you want to get in, contact BB Harrison at anglingwomen@gmail.com.
Keep going.
Oh, you want me to keep going?
Yeah, keep going.
Okay, National S'mores Day is August 10th. We honor the most commonly packed camping snack by celebrating S'mores Day on August 10th. Summertime is finally here. Camping, gathering around the fire pit and the great outdoors is a great way to get outside this summer.
That actually has like six more pages to it.
Because it has recipes.
Yeah, it has recipes. When is National S'mores Day?
The 10th.
Okay, so next Saturday we'll have the rest of that one.
Okay.
All right, so the last one you got.
And then Open Bass Tournament on Lake Joe Cassie is August 7th at Devil's Fork, sponsored by Moonville Bass Club, 5 a.m. to 12 p.m. All center tournament rules apply. $50 entry fee includes big bass, $10 optional slot fish pot, payback 1 in 7 boats. Contact Andy Hunter at 864-617-6920 or Jad Willis at 864-505-1372. 72.
And nobody will remember those phone numbers. But anyway, just look for an Open Bass Tournament on Lake Joe Cassie. Yeah. Pretty cool. The women's shooting clinic that Angling Women did with Artemis is full. So, sorry, ladies. We'll have to get some more of those things. Campfire Day and Night is celebrated the first Saturday in August, which is next Saturday, August 7th. The first Saturday in August is forever proclaimed to be Campfire Day and Night. Why day and night, you ask? It's simply because a campfire can and should be a joy anytime, day or night. So if you're not out there, and they've got some more things, how to enhance the experience and sing campfire songs. Oh, wow. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Next week, it probably shifts over to a lot of deer hunting stuff. So hang in. We got some more stuff. Anyway, make time to get out there.
Take the back road when you can.
Don't forget the camera. See you back next week. Yes, I'm going to Carolina.